40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's kick off with the semifinals of the 31st Africa Cup of Nations football tournament in Gabon. The Pharaohs of Egypt, winners of a record 7 Nations Cup titles, got a late goal from a second-half substitute player to advance to the last 4. With more details, here's reporter Samson O'Malley.
Egypt edged Morocco 1-0 in Port Gentil on Sunday night to advance into the semifinals of the 2017 African Cup of Nations. The Pharaohs' first win over their North African rivals for more than 30 years was secured by a late goal from substitute Mahmoud Abdul Mohim, setting up a clash with Burkina Faso in the last 4 on Wednesday. Brothers Andre and Jordan Ayew were on target as Ghana booked their place area run on Sunday evening in the 2017 African Cup of Nations semifinals with a 2-1 win over the Democratic Republic of Congo at the Stadio Oyem in the Gabonese city of Oyem on Sunday evening. Shedrick Bakambu squandered 2 late chances for DR Congo as Ghana just about held their nerve. Victory for the Ghanaian moves them up 1 step closer to winning a first African crown since 1982. On Saturday, Cameroon defeated Senegal 5-4 on penalties to advance to the 2017 African Cup of Nations semifinals following a goalless draw. Liverpool forward Sadio Mane, who was a hero for Senegal throughout the tournament, became the villain as his spot kick was saved and Cameroon won 5-4 on penalties. In the other game played at the Stade de Libreville, it was substitute Aristide Barnes and Prejus Nakloma, who struck inside the last 10 minutes as Burkina Faso beat Tunisia 2-0 in an entertaining Nations Cup quarterfinals at the Stade de Libreville to reach the final 4 and dump the North African out. So, after the weekend's quarterfinal matches, the semifinal matches have been slated to take place on Wednesday and Thursday. On Wednesday, it will be Burkina Faso confronting Egypt, while on Thursday, Cameroon will face Ghana. Staying with Gabon AFCON 2017, Ivory Coast manager Michel Dusia on Sunday resigned as manager of the Elephant of Cote d'Ivoire following his team's early elimination at the African Cup of Nations. The Frenchman's decision to resign after 18 months on the post was announced by the Ivorian Football Federation. Under Dusia, appointed in 2015, the defending champions failed to win a first-round game in Gabon, losing to Morocco after draws with Togo and DR Congo. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria.
Hello Africa, I'm James Barty here to remind you that February is Black History Month here in the United States, and starting Wednesday, February 1st and continuing throughout the month, we will begin our Black History Month and daily quiz series on Daybreak Africa. Listen every morning as we profile historical African Americans and African individuals and events. Send us your country's historical moment in February. You can win special VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. Please send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. We will select a winner each morning from among the correct answers.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up.
And I'm looking forward to James Buddy's Black History Month segments in February. More Africa Cup of Nations football news. Arsenal man Mohamed Elneny has been ruled out of Egypt's lineup for Wednesday's semifinal against Burkina Faso in Gabon's capital, Libreville. The 24-year-old Elneny is still bothered by a calf injury that kept him out of Sunday's 1-0 quarterfinal victory over Morocco in Port Gentil. Elneny hasn't played since Egypt's final group match, a 1-0 victory over Ghana 5 days ago. Egypt's Argentine head coach, Hector Cooper, says Elneny has a bad calf strain, and he's hoping if his team can reach the final on February 5th, Elneny will be able to return. The Pharaohs of Egypt are also likely to be without striker Marwan Mohsen when they play the Stallions of Burkina Faso in Libreville. The 27-year-old Mohsen came off the pitch after hurting his knee in the first half against Morocco, and Coach Cooper says it looks like a serious injury. Meanwhile, Cooper's coaching counterpart for Morocco, Frenchman Hervé Renard, saw his hopes of winning a third Nations Cup title with a third different country end with the loss to Egypt. Renard lifted the Nations Cup trophy in 2015 with Ivory Coast and in 2012 with Zambia. Renard says he's proud of all his Moroccan players. He says one by one they were exceptional and they must not have regrets about their performance. Just ahead, reporter Loic Youth will take a look back at some of the weekend European club football highlights.
Cheerful greetings to you all on this last Monday of January 2017, and wow, already a month down in the new year. Where is that time flying to? Anyways, it must be the entertainment that emanated from El Plastico in Germany as Hoffenheim's undefeated record would be tested against surprise package Red Bull Leipzig. Now, while the name Plastico was a clever knockoff from the famed El Clasico, both teams have punched above expectation this season, with Leipzig being Bayern's closest title challengers, while Hoffenheim the only team in the top 5 leagues yet to taste defeat. Hoffenheim's strong defensive setup and counter-attacking prowess saw them take a 1-0 lead but were pegged back before the half was over. A straight red card in 60 minutes swung the tie in Leipzig's favor, and with the second under 74-minute mark, the tie was put to bed. That incredible record coming to an end, but a run Hoffenheim can be proud of. That loss meant Eintracht Frankfurt's narrow win over Schalke lifted them over Hoffenheim into third. The champions Bayern traveled to Werder Bremen, and although they walked away 2-1 winners, the Bavarians never really looked comfortable, their 3-point gap intact, while Bremen sweating above the relegation playoff place. Darmstadt fans, look away, because their 6-1 home drubbing at the hands of Cologne is almost a certain indication of where they'll be playing their football next season. Only 2 wins so far as the team sits bottom of the log with 9 points, 4 from closest rival Hamburg. Hamburg on their end has made it a habit of flirting with relegation in recent seasons, but it could well become a reality as they traded places with Ingolstadt after the two faced off on Saturday. HSV came off worse, losing 3-1, and that's a meager 13 points from a possible 54. Wolfsburg continues to look a shadow of the team that won the Bundesliga in 2009 after they succumbed to their fourth home defeat to Augsburg. The only bright spark from this game was the form of Mario Gomez, which looks notable as he has 3 in his last 3 games. The Wolves will be hoping the World Cup winner can bang in the goals to get them further away from 14th spot. On to Dubai Arena now, where Leverkusen relinquished a 2-goal lead in the first half to lose 3-2 at home to Gladbach. Chicharito's goal had the host in cruise control in the first 45. However, a shambolic second half meant the game was turned on its head within a 20-minute period, and Gladbach now give themselves some breathing room over the teams below. Saturday's results meant Hertha Berlin could move up the table, but their new year went from bad to worse as they lost their second consecutive game 2-1 at Freiburg. They missed the chance to go level on points with third place Frankfurt, while Freiburg gleefully took their chance and jumped to 8th. Borussia Dortmund welcomed back Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang following Gabon's African Cup disqualification, and they were looking to make third place their own, knowing that a win would do just that. Well, they were on their way to the 3 points when Royce opened the scoring on 3 minutes, but a late equalizer from Dani Latta meant the Spurs were shared. They end the match day still in fourth and 14 points behind leaders Bayern. La Liga now, and I start you guys off with the team that dumped Real Madrid out of the Copa del Rey. Celta de Vigo. Having gone 40 games unbeaten, Celta ended the impressive run knocking the Madridistas out over two legs, and brewing with confidence, they followed that up with a 2-0 win at Leganes to temporarily climb into 7th, while the home team looks nervously over their shoulders at relegation candidates. Atletico's below-par season continued with a scoreless draw at Alaves. The title chances are slim, but they have a semi-final cup clash with Barca to look forward to. Villarreal brushed aside bottom team Granada 2-0, while Osasuna's 1-1 draw with Malaga keeps them deep in trouble. If you're a Madrid fan, then all the results went your way yesterday. Zidane's men put their cup disappointment behind them with a resounding 3-0 win at home to Sociedad. Kovacic, Ronaldo and Morata's goals ensured the points and opened up a 4-point gap over second with a game in hand. Barca missed the chance to maintain the 2-point lag on Madrid as they came up against a spirited Betis. The team in 13th pressed and troubled the Blaugrana all game and deservedly took a second-half lead. A mistake gave Suarez a chance to equalize on the 90th minute, and Barca can feel hard done by for not getting a second as the ball had clearly crossed the line but was never given. However, Betis didn't deserve to lose that game based on their performance. Athletic Bilbao consigned 18th place Sporting Gijón to yet again another defeat, while Sevilla's title challenge took a major hit as a second-minute red card and a penalty gave them an uphill battle at Espanyol. They lost that game 3-1 with former old boy Reyes getting on the score sheet. So Barca and Sevilla trade places to sit second and third respectively, but will not be too pleased with the points they dropped. The Premier League took a break for the magic of the FA Cup, and there were goals and upsets as to be expected from football's oldest cup competition. However, league action returns tomorrow, and there is a tasty matter of Chelsea travelling to a wounded Liverpool for a 3 p.m. kickoff, one you wouldn't want to miss. That's bye-bye from me, Loic.
Thanks, Loic. And I'm sure Loic is delighted to see his beloved Indomitable Lions of Cameroon in the semifinals of the 2017 Africa Cup of Nations football tournament. Just a reminder for our VOA listeners, the Indomitable Lions will play the Black Stars of Ghana on Thursday in the southeastern city of Franceville, Gabon. In the first semifinal on Wednesday, Egypt will go against Burkina Faso in Gabon's capital, Libreville. Both semifinal matches kick off at 1900 GMT. UTC. Here's a sunny side of sports salute to Roger Federer and Serena Williams, who solidified their status as perhaps the greatest male and female tennis players of all time with singles titles over the weekend at the Australian Open in Melbourne. Roger and Serena, both 35 years old, showed that youth will not be served in Melbourne. Federer won his record-extending 18th Grand Slam singles title with a thrilling 5-set comeback victory over Spanish rival Rafael Nadal in the men's final. And Serena beat her older sister, 36-year-old Venus Williams, 6-4 and 6-4, to win her 23rd Grand Slam singles trophy, the most by any player, male or female, in the modern era. Speaking on the court after her record-setting victory, Serena praised Venus.
There's no way I would be at 23 without her. There's no way I would be at 1 without her. There's no way I would have anything without her. She's my inspiration. She's the only reason I'm standing here today and the only reason that the Williams sisters exist. So thank you, Venus, for inspiring me.
Meanwhile, Roger Federer also had some inspirational words of praise for Rafa Nadal after his victory over the Spanish star.
You know, I'm happy for you. I would have been happy to lose too, to be honest. The comeback was perfect as it was. So tennis is a tough sport. There's no draws, but if there was going to be one, I would have been very happy to accept a draw tonight and share it with Rafa, really.
On Monday in Melbourne, Swiss tennis star Roger Federer had a chance to reflect some more on his epic five-set victory over Rafael Nadal.
I had to look at some highlights again just to remember how close the match was again, and then just go through the emotions again. Especially what makes me most happy is when I see my friends and my family happy, and all, you know, my support team, everybody who was there. When I saw how they were celebrating again, it really made it emotional. When I heard that in Switzerland people were following me, and I saw people just being generally really happy for me that I won a slam again, and particularly this one, maybe it's a bit of a fairy tale, you know, after the comeback, to come back this way.
Roger Federer came back from a 3-1 deficit in the decisive fifth set against Rafa Nadal. He won 5 consecutive games to stun Nadal and lift the trophy. And Doug Bernard, that was one of the great tennis matches I've seen.
Sonny, I don't know that I can come up with enough superlatives really to describe the level of play that we saw. I didn't get up live to watch it live. I taped it. And it was just, I mean, a masterclass perhaps. I think you referred in the intro saying that, you know, possibly we saw over the weekend two of the greatest tennis players who have ever taken to the courts, Roger Federer and Serena Williams. That I don't think is an overstatement. I think it was just some amazing play. So first, I mean, looking at the men's, it was, as you say, it was close. There was a point that you'd mentioned, and I think you're right, you'd mentioned like right around the fourth set or so, you know, you began to feel maybe a momentum shift.
I thought Nadal had it at that point. I really did.
Yeah, and he was looking strong, but Federer mounted this amazing comeback. You could say, like we've been saying all week, really this whole year has sort of been a comeback for him. So let's quick take a look at some of the records that were set. And first to the men's. Now, so for the record books, this was Federer's 18th Grand Slam win. You've mentioned that. It was his 5th Australian title, his first Grand Slam title since Wimbledon 2012. So he has had a long drought there. And it is also his first win against Nadal in 7 Grand Slam matchups. You would think that given the caliber and the longevity of Federer's play, that he would dominate Nadal in their matchups in these tourneys. He doesn't actually. Nadal has really kind of, you know, taken the reins of that. And also interesting, you know, I pointed this out last week, Friday, but Federer was seeded 17th. And Nadal was seeded 9th. And we saw the first and second players. We saw Djokovic. We saw Murray, you know, knocked out in some really kind of surprise, quirky play. So this was just great to see. Now, so let's see. So comeback, I think we can say that. Maybe we could also call it an upset. Nadal, as I say, Federer broke his 5-year drought. He also set another record, too. This is interesting. He has now topped Boris Becker and Andre Agassi for length of time in between championships.
Interesting.
5 years. And he is also, I believe, now the second oldest in men's play to win a Grand Slam in the Open era. So that's to the men's, just amazing play. The women's, I think, again, some great play, not nearly as... I don't know if you saw any of the Williams sisters.
I watched a little bit of that match. Yeah. Probably not on the same level as Federer or Nadal, but still, credit to Venus for making it to the final.
Good heavens, absolutely. And I think, obviously, superlative tennis, but for me, it felt more sort of an emotional game. Not only do you have, you know, these two siblings who've, you know, been facing each other years to years, facing off against one another. Venus, a little bit older, you know, she's really kind of mounting. She was really the underdog, I think. Surprised a lot of people by advancing to where she was. So you couldn't lose by taking either one of them. I think it was just a great feel-good. So Serena defeated her sister 6-4, 6-4. Now it's Serena's 23rd title in the Open era. And as we mentioned, that is a record. Now, the Open era, for those who, I don't know if you've discussed this before, but for those who may have forgotten or whatnot, the Open era began in 1968. I don't know if you recall this, but before 68, it was just, quote, amateurs who were playing in these tournaments. Now, I think the term used then was schmamateurs because These people were, you know, it was sort of like calling them amateurs, wink, wink. And I think a lot of people, especially the British, just said, look, let's stop this sham. You know, let's let the pros play against the amateurs. And that really began in 68, the Open era. So all that said, one other record to go to before I move on to other things. Serena Williams now has 23 titles in the Open era. That's a record, but there's one other. She's still trailing. I did not know this. I had to look this up. Retired Australian number one player Margaret Court, who is now actually a reverend, a minister,
okay,
down in Australia. She retired in 1970. She won 24 titles, but only 11 of them were in the Open era. So, you know, Serena looks great. Venus, by the way, said she felt great. She's, don't feel sorry for me. She intends to go on competing. And so we'll see both of them, you know, letting it go.
Yeah, interesting point, Doug, that maybe Serena and Federer, they're going to stick around for maybe two or three more years.
Well, you know, I mean, just looking at, the caliber, the domination that Serena shows on the court, I think she's, you know, she's got more left in her, certainly. Federer had to struggle a little bit more. I mean, he's had these nagging knee problems and some other things. He's taken some time off. But, you know, in his position, he can kind of pull back, train, get strong. He doesn't have to always be competing. So he can really let maybe some of his skills come to the fore. So, you know, I think he's got time left in him as well.
Doug, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. What else is trending out there, Doug?
Two stories getting a lot of talk on social media. First off, you know, professional cycling has been dogged for years and years by rumors of doping and drugging and that kind of thing. Well, 60 Minutes, and this goes back a little bit, but 60 Minutes, a TV program here in the United States, aired a segment last night looking at a different, what they call mechanical doping. These are tiny, tiny little motors. I don't know how they work. They're very expensive, that can be placed inside bikes for mechanical boost, kind of mechanical doping. So now we know, there's been rumored for years, but now we know they exist. They work really well, as they were demonstrating.
Are they placed inside the tire?
Well, there's various places that they can be placed. There's some that are placed in sort of the base bottom of the tubing of the frame of the bike. There's some that are placed, believe it or not, like right down in the derailleur, in the back wheel.
Okay.
They work really well. And the guy who is manufacturing them says he, quote, knows they're being used in pro events. Now, on Twitter, a lot of people pushing back. Here's Dan Worry, who's a writer with Velo News. He says, I don't know if motors are in use or not, but that piece was not well done or illuminating. Peter Flax, also a former writer with Cycling News, says, man, there was a time when every 60 Minutes piece was great. That motor segment last night was weak, just wasn't solid or newsworthy. 60 Minutes defending its piece, but a lot of people on Twitter pushing back and saying, we're not quite convinced.
Any cyclists come out and talk about the piece?
Well, no, just one, Greg LeMond, who was one of the, you know, he's now sort of the great American player who has not ever been implicated in any doping scandal. And he's really calling, he's pushing hard. He says, this needs to be investigated.
What else is trending, Doug, in our final minute?
Real quick, a fun one. It was the NHL All-Star Game this weekend. It's really it's a fun game. It's skills competition and players meeting each other. It was also to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the NHL. They named the 100 best players of all time. 48 of them were there to take the ice.
Wow.
Just amazing for a hockey fan. Best moment has to be during the All-Star Game when the Coyotes, Chris Pronger, who's about 6'6", cross-checked Justin Bieber into the boards, into the glass. There's an image of, you have to go see it. It's a laughing Chris Pronger and Justin Bieber, just his face completely smushed up against the glass. And there's this quick quote from Chris Pronger. I was giving him a little back massage in the corner.
VOA's Doug Bernard. Thank you, Doug. And that wraps up the January 30th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Dan Crafton. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Substantial regions of Africa's Lake Chad Basin, particularly northeastern Nigeria, are at risk of facing famine. At least two locations likely already experienced famine last year. Lake Chad's shrinking, years of poor harvest, and a limping economy have contributed to the crisis. But the primary reason is the violence and destruction caused by the terror group Boko Haram, its attacks on the civilian population, the armed conflict with the Nigerian and regional militaries, and the resulting destruction of civilian infrastructure. In Nigeria, the Boko Haram insurgency has caused the deaths of some 20,000 people over the past 7 years, abducted thousands from their schools and homes, and practically stopped all agricultural production. It is responsible for the current displacement of 1.63 million people from their homes within Nigeria, where hundreds of thousands are cut off from assistance. The conditions are worst in Nigeria's states of Adamawa, Yobe, and Borno, areas where Boko Haram is most active. According to a recent United Nations analysis, some 8.5 million people there are in urgent need of humanitarian aid. In Borno state alone, 3.2 million people out of a population of 5.5 million are facing severe food insecurity. The UN estimated that 55,000 people faced famine in 2016, and that number could climb to 120,000 by the summer. Around 400,000 children under the age of 5 are severely malnourished, and UNICEF fears that number will also rise to 450,000. To help mitigate this crisis of food insecurity, the United Nations has put out a call for international donations to meet the humanitarian needs of the people of northeastern Nigeria. The 2017 Humanitarian Response Plan, Appeal for Nigeria, a fundraising effort coordinated by the United Nations, is for well over $1 billion. However, if these urgent needs are not addressed quickly, the required budget will grow. Considering that the 2016 Nigeria appeal for $484 million is less than half funded, the prospects for raising a sum of $1 billion will be very challenging. The United States has already committed $92 million in the first quarter of the 2017 fiscal year, bringing the total amount for fiscal years 2016 and 2017 to $291 million. This has become one of the world's greatest overlooked crises. We call on other donors to move quickly in providing humanitarian funding for the millions of people in the region whose lives have been affected by Boko Haram violence and to avert likely famine.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I am your host Shaka Salee. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, the 28th African Union Summit, voting for a new leader, discussing the re-entry of Morocco, and mapping the future of the continent. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 1830 UTC.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Barty here to remind you that February is Black History Month here in the United States. And starting Wednesday, February 1st, and continuing throughout the month, we will begin our Black History Month and Daily Quiz series on Daybreak Africa. Listen every morning as we profile historical African Americans and African individuals and events. Send us your country's historical moment in February. You can win special VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. Please send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. We will select a winner each morning from among the correct answers. Get up.